हरि ओम सहनावतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 27, Adhyayana 3, Adhikarana 1, Realizations of Vyasadeva in Trance. So now the Purva Paksha. The Mayavadis say these are preliminary steps for purifying the heart so that the practitioner becomes qualified to know the meaning of the Shruti Mahavakyas. Okay. Uttara. But according to Shastras, knowledge, vidya, and ignorance, avidya, are both products of Maya. So even if one gets rid of his avidya with the help of vidya by studying the Vedic verses, he is still bound by vidya. How will he do away with this upadhi called vidya? If he is not devoid of all upadhis, he cannot realize Brahman, since Brahman is both vidya and avidya. This Krishna explained to Uddhava in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, 11.11.3. Vidya vidye mama tanu vidyudhana sharirinam moksha bhanda kari adye mayaya me vinir mike. O Uddhava, vidya, knowledge, and avidya, ignorance, which causes liberation and bondage to the human beings, are two primordial energies created by my maya. Mere knowledge of Brahman, therefore, cannot bring about liberation, right? Because what are we talking about here? This vidya and avidya. So avidya means this ignorance, so that's straightforward. But here, vidya, simply that you have knowledge of the soul and of liberation and those kind of things, but where are you getting liberated to? How far does that liberation extend? You know, what destination can you get to with it? Right? Not out of the Mahatattva. So therefore, it's still controlled by Maya. So it's only, so when we say, when we're talking about vidya, we mean vidya meaning the transcendental, yes. Yeah, but even this, even you're talking about the paravidya meaning it's above the karma. See, because you have some overlaps here. Is that you have the aspect of that what is it? In other words, this we'll see coming up more and more. You have the aspect of how it means in the Chaturshloki. Then Krishna is saying how he is everything, right? So that's the platform of Brahman. He's pervading everything. He is everything, right? Then he himself is controlling all this as Paramatma, right? Like this. But then in the third verse, he points out that he himself as a person is separate from this. I mean, Jesus is just his energies and how he does things. Being God, that's just what he does. But he as God, as a person, that's different. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So, that aspect is that one is understand these first two, these are concepts within the material world. Brahman and Paramatma. Because in the spiritual world, you don't need these understandings. You have Bhagavan. It already includes Brahman and Paramatma. But what we're saying here is when you have Paramatma and Brahman realization separate from Bhagavan realization, that only is in the material world. Right? Because in the spiritual world, they don't see the difference. It's Krishna who's expanding, Krishna who comes as Paramatma, Krishna who pervades everything. means the person. You understand? So, even they have some degree of transcendental knowledge, right? They'll have a little bit more of the soul than that, and about Brahman, but it's very minimal, technically, because they don't know that the soul is coming from the Lord, the soul is eternal. They're thinking it's illusory. So actually, how transcendental is their knowledge? Right? And Brahman, they understand, is unchanging and this and that, but we've seen from their arguments, they completely leave that aside. They state it and then act exactly against that. Right? Because people generally won't do that. Right? So, that's why I said Shankaracharya is being very clever. You make the statement about Brahman, and then after that they deal with Brahman as if it's not Brahman. Right? So, you know, so it goes against their definitions. So, how much transcendental knowledge are they dealing with? They're working within the realm of transcendental knowledge, but their interpretation of this transcendental knowledge is not actually transcendental. It's if they're focused on it, it may be enough to get them into the Brahman, you know, means out of the material universe, out of, you know, and situated in Mahakalapura, right? Because we saw that Gopakumar saw, you know, so many living entities there, you know, just in the, you know, in that whiteness of Brahman, just sitting there and meditating and thinking they're Brahman, but he could see the individual persons there. But they're meditating on Brahman, they don't see their individuality. Right? But it's not that it's not like that. You know, it's just like, let us say, we'll try it. You have these kind of virtual reality kind of goggle thingies, and people put them on, and then they do activities. You know, so they're in their living room doing something that looks totally stupid because they're in their living room. But in their mind, they're playing tennis or doing all kinds of far-out stuff. Yeah, so that's Mahakalapura. They're all sitting there in meditation thinking that they're Brahman, but everybody else can see, no, they're just sitting there. Does that make sense? So that's the reality. So, therefore, they're counted in transcendentalists because they work in the area. But they're not actually transcendentalists because they can't remain there. So that's why, because they use the same terminology, same verses, same scriptures, you know, same kind of techniques, everything. So, as we were saying, the techniques that we use and the techniques the impersonalists use to get up to the liberated platform are the same. It's because it's the mechanics. If you're dealing with Brahman, Brahman is the mechanics. Right? Paramatma means then you're dealing with what you should be doing and what you shouldn't be doing. Means you as an individual. The mechanics means just what should be done and not be done to make it work. You know, it's just like, let's say, the father is driving the car, right? And the, you know, 14-year-old teenager is driving the car. So both of them, as long as they use the proper mechanics, the car will run. Right? So on the Brahman platform, it does work. But when you get to the Paramatma platform, is the 14-year-old supposed to be driving the car? Right? So that's where that right and wrong comes in. Right? Does that make sense? Because that's a sense of, that's where the justice and all these other aspects come in. Right? So, then appreciating this, then on to the personal platform, then Madhvacharya says that's actual liberation, because then you actually are situated eternally in this liberated position. The other ones, they attain it and then lose it. Right? Does that make sense? But for the devotees, because they're attaining the person, the other two are already included. So that means they're always going to be on the spiritual platform. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Will you still say, remember the three levels, like material, spiritual, and transcendental?
Yes. Yes, so they'll deal with the spiritual to some degree, but they have no idea of the transcendental. Right? So, it means the practicalness of it, the technicalness of it, is exactly the same. But the point is it becomes easy for the devotees, because if you're dealing with the transcendental, the spiritual becomes easy. Right? Because if you think of Krishna, you're absorbed in Krishna, that controls the senses. But they're not thinking of Krishna, so they have to actually control the senses mechanically. So that becomes very difficult. For the devotees, it's automatic. You're taking prasad, then what's the problem of controlling the tongue? You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that the spiritual is already, the spiritual situation is already included in bhakti, and the mechanics of the karma and those results that are gained from that are already included in bhakti. Right? So they're all one thing in the spiritual world. You don't have to make the distinction, because the devotees, out of their attraction and love for Krishna, are going to do everything in line with Krishna. So there's not going to be something else. So you don't have to make a distinction. But if you need, you can mechanically break it. You can break it down, analytically break it down. That here's the activity of cooking, and she being the mother of Krishna and the time of the day and all that, and then she's cooking for Krishna, the appropriate thing. Right? And then, but the reason she's doing it is to please Krishna as a person, because of her attraction. So does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the point, is that coming to this, that's why you see, yeah, we'll see in Chaitanya Charitamrita, this will come up about this principle. It will come up, is that the aspect of being spiritually situated, or the Shantarasa, in other words, appreciation of Krishna's position. But you'll see is that, you know how in the 11th canto it's talking about the sages and it's talking about the devotees. And sometimes you see it's talking about as they're on the same platform, but other times it talks about them that they're different. You know, so it can be a little confusing. What's the difference? Is that they can be on, the sages are on that position, but it's because they appreciate Brahman or Paramatma, but they're not seeing Bhagavan. Right? Because Paramatma, he's a person. But it's not about him as a person. You know what I'm saying? It's not personal. Does that make sense? So that's the difference.
If someone is on the spiritual platform, then for him to advance to transcendental, if he's introduced to Bhagavan, it becomes very easy for him.
Yes, it's very easy. Because you have a person. It's very easy to do things for a person. It's very difficult to do things that are not connected to a person. Like that. Does that make sense? So it's very difficult. So then these sages are these, you know, that they're talking about, that are transcendentally, you know, are spiritually situated. I mean, they'll use transcendent, because it depends how you're using it. You can use them interchangeably. But if you want to make the distinction, then you use spiritual and transcendental. So they're both situated because they all appreciate the Lord, and they're appreciating His position, how He's pervading everything. But there's different levels of realization, whether they simply see that on the Brahman platform, on the Paramatma platform, or on the Bhagavan platform. Right? So devotees, where we'll count it as, that's why you see sometimes it's counted as a rasa and sometimes not. Right? So those who is counted as a rasa and that has that devotional feeling of him as a person, then we'll count them as devotees. Those who have that position but aren't, it's not about that, it's not so much the devotional aspect, but they appreciate that, it's knowledge. Mm-hmm. Those will be the sages. Mm-hmm. When you're making a distinction. Right? So because that position of the sages is the same position that the devotees are functioning from, or you can say it the other way around. Then you can say it that they're, you know, devotee is a sage. Right? You understand? Because, see, if we appreciate that everything's coming from bhakti, means everything. It's just a matter of whether it's in its devotional state, in its pure state, or in its perverted state. Or distorted state. It's all coming from bhakti. Because that's all there is. Right? Then, because the devotee, the living entity is not satisfied with in that position, then they try to deal separately than Krishna. Therefore, the whole material consciousness and material phenomena is there. So, it's just a reflection of the same thing, because you have the same living entities. It's just like, let's say, the child is living in the house of the parents. But somehow or another, he's not very happy with that, you know, like that. They feel he's restricting too much, or whatever it is, he wants to be emancipated. So whatever it is. Now, when he leaves that situation, is he now just going to float around outside in the air, or is he going to go to another house? And there's another bed, another couch, another TV, another phone, another kitchen, another garbage can.
Another parent.
Yeah, someone else will be. Yeah, because he's so useless now. His girlfriend is like his mom, right? Yeah, so. You know. Does this make sense? So that's what's happening. That's why it says perverted reflection. It's a reflection, but it's perverted because it's without Krishna. Though, because everything is Krishna, it can't be anything but Krishna. But, because they're not interested in its connection with Krishna, they don't want to know about it. So even here, the impersonalists, even though they're so respected within the material sphere, but they still have just as much problem with the authority of the Lord as everybody else does. Right? They'll accept as much as will help in their liberation, just as the karmi will accept God as much as will help in their karma. Right? But we'll count them all as humans, because at least they're turning to the scriptures, they're following authority. Right? They're doing these aspects. So because of that, then it's considered that that is at least human life, because if you can convince them of the Supreme Lord, they're already living a human lifestyle. Right? It makes it easy for them. Because we saw in fifth canto, where we were dealing with the Kanaras and Kimpurushas, when they were all offering their prayers, they were pointing out, since they happen to be forest people, that, you know, all these technical things are, you know, not generally what they're absorbed in. You know, it just makes it'll make it more difficult. Right? So, they're counted as humans. Well, below that, then it's considered subhuman. That's why it's called Upadharma. They're following Dharma. But the problem is their following of Dharma is not for the purpose of pleasing God as a person, only as far as Brahman or Paramatma. Right? Does that make sense? The Karmis is Paramatma, and the Jnanis it's Brahman. Right? So that's why you see the yogis are counted as Karmis, because it's about Paramatma. Because generally they're interested in Siddhi and things like that. But if not, they go to the point seeing Paramatma, think that they're Paramatma. So then they merge into Brahman like the impersonalists. So they're on a higher platform, right? Because they're dealing with Paramatma. And then from their realization, they move back to Brahman. That's why it's considered more unfortunate. Right? So they're dealing with the transcendental, but but the point is they have that position of that better realization. Is that understand? So the karmis is there, then you have the spiritual in between, then you have the transcendental. So in one sense, it's easier for the karmis to appreciate the transcendental than for the jnanis. Because the jnanis being impersonal, then the personal just doesn't work for them. It uses intelligence and detachment in that. That's why it's put higher. Right? But you see, it's coming because of a frustration of karma. Dharma artha karma, when that doesn't work for you, then there's moksha. In a sense. So it's just a negative reaction to the karmis. So they're just the negative form of karmis. Yeah.
How the impersonal is acting against his own definition of Brahman, their activity in action, they actually act against their own definition of Brahman.
Because they say he has no qualities, can't be changed in this, but at the same time they say that the jivas in that are a reflection of Brahman, but to reflect you have to have qualities. If I'm going to get a jiva in a reflection, that means there has to be that potency in Brahman. But they're saying Brahman has no qualities, so what you're getting in reflection? Nothing. Right? Or if you take a part of Brahman, then the problem is Brahman's unlimited, is all pervading, so it would be pervading the space where we say that that's the jiva. So that's still Brahman. So they contradict their own philosophy. So, yes.
When you say transcendentalist, can we say, can you equal with devotion?
We can. It means generally that's how we'll interpret it. Because the others, they're given the respect of a transcendentalist because they're renouncing that. Like in 77 during the Kumbh Mela, the devotees were going around and there were some sannyasis. Prabhupada said they have to offer obeisances. They said, but they're Mayavadis. He says, no, but according to the etiquette, the social etiquette, they're sannyasis and you're not. You offer obeisances. Because they're following the process of elevation, just they're not going very far. You know, it's just like, we can look at it another way. How you say? Three people get on the bus outside the front gate. Right? And so, it's one bus, right? But one person gets off at Krishnagar, one person gets off at Ranagat, and one person gets off at Calcutta. You understand? So that's the Vedic process. It's one process. That's why Krishna says it's one path. It's just, depending on how far you go, there's a name for that. And if you're going the other way, then there's names for that also. Does that make sense? So, there's only one process. It's a devotional process, but now, if it's performed with devotion, we call it bhakti. But if it's performed not for the goal of pleasing Krishna, it's not called bhakti, even though the processes of bhakti are being used. There isn't something else. Just because it has a different name doesn't mean it's something else. Like if I call this thing here in front of me a gizmo, is now it's different than a tape recorder? Mm-hmm. What about if I call it a gadget? Now it must be totally different. What about a thingamabob? You know? Are they all different things? No, it's one entity. So, just because we give it different names, then it has a particular meaning. Right? You know, tape recorder means it's exactly taping. Right? If I call it a gizmo, means that it's technically, you know, does something. I call it a gadget, it means it's kind of, you know, that's, I'm looking at more the external form of it, that it's a bit of a trip to work with. And a thingamabob is I don't even know what it is, but it's that thing. You know what I'm saying? So, it's giving definitions for different views of the one thing, for different purposes. But it doesn't mean that it is different. Right? And so the effect on the person who's seeing that way, that's all the more it is. So even though they're performing the activities of bhakti in karma and jnana, they don't get the results of bhakti. That also becomes confusing. When we start to see the broadness of it and that, then we'll start to see, okay, let's say there's somebody who has faith in God and all this, but they're not following the Vedic literatures and all that, you know. So Krishna says he protects the devotees. Will he be protecting them? Will they have the same thing? It's eternal. The devotee does an activity. It's eternal. They're doing an activity. Is it eternal? So the point is on eternality, is that what's the purpose of doing something? It's not for eternality. Right? It's for karma. Right? It means you do follow the thing. You're a good person. You follow the rules. You go to heaven. Now, they want to go to heaven eternally, but can you go to heaven eternally? No. So, they're still working on the mundane plane. But, in a more purified, there's more goodness there. It's a more purified state. And that they're accepting the laws of God in that. Yes, there'll be some extra protection from God, but it won't give eternal results. But, if that's prominent, then at some point they may actually want to know the real thing. Then they'll come in contact with devotees. Then we're starting the Agyata Satipa. Does that make sense? Because it has to touch the chit potency. You know, something's there. And maybe it is, a little bit, but it's only going to work within that area of karma. Or work within the area of jnana. But bhakti surpasses that. So once you come in contact with the sampradayic devotees, then it surpasses karma and jnana. before is that they've done pious activities, they'll get results within the piety. Does that make sense? So there's difference. There's difference in the levels. It's a science. But the point is people who are accepting that human platform of understanding, whether they're practicing and how nicely or not, but they accept that there's the Supreme, they accept that there's laws, they accept that they have to make some adjustments in their life for this, that would be considered, you know, within the human context. Right? But now there's 400,000 kinds of humans, so, you know, it's not, you know, where they fit into there is another thing. Does that make sense? So, of that, those who accept the Vedic literature and follow the directions of that, and therefore accept Varnashram, that's rare. That species is rare, because most don't. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Yes.
Maharaj, in the context of avidya and vidya, Prabhupada in the fourth canto explains in like one paragraph the different levels.
Okay.
The first level is those who are completely bound by avidya, which are the karmis, like, you know, they are just engaged in sense gratification.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next level is the jnanamishra bhaktas, who think something, there is something beyond just, you know, sense gratification.
Okay.
And the third level is distinguished from the jnanis because they accept the Lord has Shakti.
Okay.
And because of that, the natural outcome is they accept the Shadaishwaryas, the six opulences of the Lord.
Okay.
And only a very advanced devotee after that, after accepting this level, the last stage, the higher stages, he accepts the pastimes of the Lord.
Mm.
That Lord can perform pastimes also.
Mm.
So like this is defined in this four levels.
Okay. Yeah, it should be. There's a little line down here. And then next to this, there's a little number. And then down here, then there's this paragraph from Srila Prabhupada from the fourth canto.
Oh, yeah, is it in this? I was thinking it's from the next book.
It can come in all the books. It's a nice point. We don't have to limit it. You know, it's not that, you know, we're writing the purports or, you know, things like that. Oh, we've used Sarvadharma Pratyaja already. We can't use it ever again. You know, like that. Does that make sense? So all, it means all these things that you come up with like that, put them in. It's good. Yeah. Okay, so you understand that? So when we're giving these, all these words, they have their definitions, but they are defined for the various levels of consciousness. So as we raise the consciousness, then the quality of that knowledge is also greater. You know? So that's always the point. So just like you see, it's when you're dealing with the first one, the Supreme is the absolute and one without a second and all that. But in that definition, it's always Brahman with, you know, comparing to Bhagavan. But we see, as Prabhu is pointing out, it's not a matter of the aspect of the Shaktis. That's the next point. He's endowed with all Shaktis. Because you can accept him as the Supreme, but not actually understand the Shaktis. With that. Does that make sense? So that way you can see it. Then when you accept the Shaktis, then you can get these other aspects. Because then you can start engaging, and that's where Yukta Vairagya and all that comes in. Otherwise, then you'll make a distinction. But as long as it touches Krishna, it's beneficial. You'll advance. But there is a hierarchy in the advancement. That's why it says advance. There's something more.
Right? We can have different definitions according to our own consciousness.
Yes, yes. But these different definitions aren't contradictory to each other.
Yes.
It's just the level that we're at. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say, arithmetic does not contradict algebra. Or geometry, trigonometry, or quantum.
Yes.
Right? It doesn't contradict any of these. But at the same time, there's levels. So it's just as you go, it means more. Mm-hmm. Does
The identity cannot catch.
No, you won't catch. It's all by association.
Yes.
Like that. So that's why we have to hear from authority. Because they know.
Yes.
We don't. You know, that's why it said there's the Acharya. Then we, as following the Acharya, you know, trying to understand ourselves and preach and benefit others, we can give, as Prabhupada points out, relevant instruction.
Mm-hmm.
Is this relevant to the situation, the person that are there, you know, for ourselves, according to that? But the instruction is coming from the Acharya.
Mm-hmm.
So. Oh, okay. I was thinking, why is it going here? They bring their own. Oh, I see. Yeah. All the thinking's going on, so it's creating so much heat and all that. So that's why you have to move it over there, so it misses that. Okay. Mere knowledge of Brahman therefore cannot bring about liberation. Right? Because just, you know, as it pointed out, the rabbit thinks it's an elephant, does it become an elephant? No. So the same way, it's just because you think about Brahman and I am Brahman doesn't make you Brahman. Not in the context they're thinking about, because we've always been Brahman. It's just that we're Jiva Brahman, right? But they're saying no, we're Brahma Jyotir Brahman. No, we're not. We're Jiva Brahman. Mm-hmm. So, it is devotion and not mere knowledge that cuts the bonds of Maya, right? Because otherwise, they can get the so-called liberation. They don't get past the bondage of Maya. They get out of being in a particular, they get out of the secondary manifestation. But they don't get beyond the primary. Right? Because what will happen is they'll get beyond the secondary. So if you get to Mahakalapura. So, but you're still situated in the environment of the primary. Though you're not thinking of it because you're so absorbed in Brahman. Right? But being a person, how long can you just think of nothingness? Right? Not very long. You know, especially when up there it's not working on our time, it's working on time there. Right? And so then by the time there, you're going to get bored and want to do something. You're a person. So what are you going to think of? You're going to think of the 24 elements within the primary creation. Right? And that will then give you a specific secondary, you know, manifestation of the body and situation. So they never get beyond Maya. It appears they have. It's just like we get on a trampoline. It appears we've gone beyond gravity. You think, wow, I'm flying, but then you go down. But they don't talk about going down. Right? In the trampoline, you talk about the part going up. You don't talk about the part going down. Right, so as they're there that moment, then they're thinking, yes, I'm transcendental, then boom, they're down again, and then boom, they're down. So that's what the living entity does. They just bounce around in the material universe, and or sometimes out, you know. And anyway, every time Mahavishnu breathes in, everybody goes in, so there's nothingness, so they get to enjoy the voidism, right? Then when he breathes out during the primary creation, then you get to enjoy the impersonalism, you know, the Vishuddha Sattva. And then when Brahma's creation is there, then you get to enjoy the karma. And when that doesn't work, then you try to get out. But, you know, these three are always going on in the cycle. Okay, yes.
I think it's in Paramatma Sandarbha where this is discussed more in detail, where he expresses that the vidya of the material vidya, what we are discussing now, the only advantage of it is why it can point you to the transcendental vidya.
Yes.
And then because of that, then you are better situated. So what the transcendental vidya is different, that is explained in detail.
Yes, because transcendental will be about Krishna as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Then you see the context of Brahman and Paramatma connected to that. But to just see Brahman and Paramatma not connected to the person, it's not technically transcendental knowledge. It's working within the context of transcendental knowledge, but the effect that it has on the practitioner is not transcendental. But, as Prabhu is pointing out, that Jiva Goswami is saying, it points you in the direction. So therefore, let's say you have a karmi, you know, who's nicely following, you know, like that, or a jnani who's nicely following. Now, in that, in those things, is it mentioned in scriptures that you're supposed to associate with saintly persons? Right? So in both of those scenarios, that's what you do. Now, in that context, you might come across a pure devotee and then hear about devotional service. So it points you in the direction that it's favorable for. So when it comes along, it's just like we do programs in people's houses. So therefore, you ask a Hindu person if you'd like a program in their house, you know, kirtan, some lecture, some, you know, like this, take some prasad. They're perfectly comfortable with that because they do that anyway. You know, that somebody's willing to come to the house, great. But it's because they're following that culture, it points them in that direction, so they're there. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what's going on in the whole process. That's why the Vedic system is superior, because it always brings you in contact with devotional service. While the contemporary, it doesn't. It has to break down authority for it to work. At least the modern version, the secular version, you could say. Does that make sense? And then in the others who do accept, has an aspect of God consciousness, then they only see the externals of their form and don't accept anyone else. So then it's a little bit better, but at the same time it's not enough, because you're supposed to see all living entities connected to the Lord, and they'll see all living entities that are within their practice as connected to the Lord, and everybody else is not.
Okay. So, yeah. Madam, regarding the Vidya, there is one quote that one is oneness of the Jiva with Lord, another is the relationship between Jiva and Lord, and one is the pastimes of the Lord and all this. So that level is there? Vidya.
The knowledge?
Yes, Vidya. Jiva Goswami gives, I think, this definitions. That, the
then where did you hear these?
I think in CC, Chaitanya and Prabhupada mentioned
in this. In CC.
Chaitanya. And the three levels of knowledge.
Okay.
Verses 4, 9, 16.
Okay. No, we're just asking because, yeah. So the point is all these are all discussed. But when we discuss them, we always discuss them in context of Krishna, of Bhagavan. But the technical points that are being made are ones that devotees will understand in that progression and understanding. But at the same time, that may be all that someone in their level of understanding is catching. But we talk about this point, and for the devotees, they see it in relationship to Bhagavan. But the impersonalists, they'll see it in connection with that. The karmis will see it in connection with their level. Just like if I say now, you know, today, you know, we're going to do something very special today. We're going to have a very special lunch and that, you know, really nice prasad and all that. Okay? So we say that. And so many will consider, okay, this is a nice thing. Others may consider, oh, you know, then you have to go to so much trouble, go out of the way, this, that, blah, like that. But at the same time, is that even if we're all comfortable with that, then when I say special, nice, you know, extraordinary, this and that, then everybody is thinking of different things. Right? Does that make sense? There's different considerations. Someone's wondering, is there going to be enough, you know, like this and that? Someone else, is there going to be enough chili in it? You know, another one says, it's going to be, you know, understand? There's going to be all these different things. And then the preparations themselves. You understand? So the same words give different connotations. So the Vedic literatures, because that's the point, it's personal. One may say, well, wouldn't it be so much easier if it was just exact terms that it meant that and it's never used in anything else? But then it's not personal. Because the same word to different people mean different things. It has to mean. If you say family to one person, it means one thing. Say family to another person, it means something else. You know? Just, does that make sense? You know, it's just like you have that aspect of, let's say, family. So then it's a smaller family, so occasionally some other people are invited like that, and it's a smaller kind of thing and all that. But then some families are huge. Right? And the bigger the family, the more often they have things going on, people coming over, because they're used to having, you know, 10, 15 people in the house, so another 5, 10 doesn't matter. Right? But if you're used to 2, 3 people in the house, then, you know, another 1 or 2 is, you know, stretching it. Right? Does that make sense? It'll be very specific. Right? Like that. Well, the 15 people in the house are all so different that you invite another bunch of people that are all so different, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? Because there's a taste in that. It's just like, if you're going to do like a mixed vegetable, you know, you can do 2 or 3, it works, but actually 5 is considered a proper minimum. But then when you get up more, it gets to like 12, then it becomes, it gets its own flavor. So the more, like you have khichdi, the more things you put in, that you know, it gets a background flavor of something. So they're used to that kind of flavor. Otherwise, if it's smaller, you have to be very exact what you can put together. Yes?
An authentic sambar has 27 ingredients.
27 ingredients. Yeah. Authentic sambar. Half of them are different types of chili? No, that's in Mexico. They have 17 kinds of chilies, and they each have a name. And they all have different preparations that they go in. Yeah. Right? And the fun part is, this is the most fun part, is that's in America. And somehow or another, Americans aren't into chilies, you know. Chili is from America. It's not, nowhere else in the world do they have chili. It grows in America. Right? Like that. So, you know, along with eggplant and potatoes and all those things. Somehow or another, they accept all that, but not the chili part. They're all the same family. You know? Yeah, no, there's a lot of different spices and different things that go in, and dals and vegetables, and certain vegetables need to be in there like that to be bona fide. You can put other things. I mean, 27 is the standard. You can put a few other things in there. But at least it should have that. Huh?
You want to counter that, like you put tamarind, then you have to put jaggery to counter that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so everything has, it's always to get the balance.
Spontaneous shaktis.
Yes. Yeah. Yes?
You have to say that Russians also, they have their balance, cabbage and potato.
Yes,
yes. One another.
Yeah, you can have one, you can have the other, you can have them both, you can have cabbage with potatoes in it, potatoes with cabbage in it. You can take the potatoes and that, put them in the cabbage, roll it up. You know,
we
like
have that trap.
Yeah. In Poland they call it, I think, gołąbki. Yeah. What do you call it?
Golubcy.
Does it mean pants?
No. It means the birds.
Oh, yeah. Pigeons. Pigeons. Okay, it's pigeons. Pants is something else.
Yes.
Yeah, their hooves. They got all these. It's like weird stuff. Yes. Yeah. And then there's French cooking. Yeah. Yes. So this whole point is that just keeping making it, the rabbit will not turn into elephant just by meditating, I am an elephant, I am an elephant. Like, because they're saying, I am Brahman, I am Brahman. That won't make you Brahman. Right?
But if they say it at the end of their life, it should, according to the local.
Yeah. But then you have to practice that. But the thing is that you go to wherever is there, but the point is that It's still within the material realm. So are they actually liberated?
Temporarily.
Yeah, so it's not really. You know, it's just like when you get the paycheck, you know, I mean, when they tell you how much you'll get per week, now are you rich? No, because then first of all, they're going to take out the taxes. So you're going to get less. You know, it's like the American, they never, the tax is not in the price?
Yeah, that's really.
Yeah. Well, that's because there's so many different taxes of different things. The city has tax, the district has tax, the state has tax, the country. So which one's applying, you can't say. Each item is different. It's controlled by different rules. So for them, they just put the price, and then on top of that's the tax. So if it says it's $10, it might actually be 14. What's the add with that? Yeah. So you add it. Yes. And so then the tax comes out. Then you get your check. Then you have that. It's still not rich because you still have to pay the bills. And then once you pay the bills, then you have a little bit left. Now that's what you actually are doing. Does that make sense? So that's the point is that you say you're liberated, but then you have to take out all the things that are there, and then you end up actually where you are. Okay. It is devotion and not mere knowledge that cuts the bonds of Maya. As confirmed in the Daivi Esha Gunamayi verse of Bhagavad Gita 7:14, as confirmed later in Bhagavad Gita 11:53-54. The form you are seeing with your own transcendental eyes cannot be understood simply by studying the Vedas, nor by undergoing serious penances, nor by charity, nor by worship. It is not by these means that one can see me as I am. My dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am, standing before you, and can thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. Right? So, nothing else. That's why he's saying pure devotion, that's how you see Krishna. Anything else, you don't. Right? It means it's devotional service, it's mixed, you'll see Krishna to some degree. But what the part that you're not seeing is blocked by what's mixed. If it's karma or jnana, it will block. So it's different. Right? So that's why the pure devotee sees on one level, the mixed devotee sees on another level. Then the jnani on another level, the karmi on another level, and the vikarmi below that. Okay. So in other words, the aspects of the vikarmi, those are there for the, you know, all the animals and all that. Mm-hmm. It's just the human identifies, and they have that. They just have that own sophistication. It appears, but then these things the animals do themselves. Like there was I don't know if you ever seen it, sometimes from like a coconut frond, because that's the most popular place, is like a coconut frond, there'll be like a woven nest hanging off of that. You ever seen those?
Yes.
No? They're not so common anymore. It's one kind of bird. I'm not sure what it's called. Probably something like a weaver bird or something.
Weaver. The
bird
is weaver.
Weaver, okay. And so then they go out and they take from the tree many times the strips off of there from other places. But it's always like that. And they have a way to weave it that is holding onto the tree. Even in a storm, generally, a new one that they're using will not blow off. If it's been there for some time, it'll, you know, once they've left, it might fall off. And it's waterproof. Right? And you enter it from the bottom, so the rain can't get in. You know? Like that. It has its connection, then there's a round area, and then there's a tube off, that like that. And they come and they fly up into there. And I was told that there the British had a commission that was trying to figure that out. And they could never work out how it's done. Yeah. So they have technology that, you know, is very difficult to figure out. So it's not that there isn't that kind of stuff. It's there in the animal kingdom. You know, skyscrapers, termites, they all have skyscrapers. You leave them long enough, they'll always build, you know, especially if it's hot, it'll be like 2 meters high. Now, compared to a white ant, how tall is that? It's huge. Plus, they have a basement. They go down also just about as much. So we don't have such things. Right? We don't, means even the biggest buildings we have now aren't as massive as it will be compared to them. Plus, you won't have that many basements. Right? Does that make sense? You know, maybe in a, you know, how you say, something to do with the government, but generally they don't get past 26. But, you know, they just, you know, it's like, if it's hundreds tall, it's hundreds underground. So all these things you have, you know, what they can do, you know, it's like you have the dung beetle. It can lift 40 times its own weight. Right? So even our best weightlifters can't do that. You know, the guy can lift, you know, say 500 kilos or something like that. But the problem is he weighs about 200 or 300. You know, so the more he weighs, the more he can lift, the bigger he is, and the more he weighs. So it's not like... Yeah. So it's already there. So that's, they're limited to that. Then when you accept the human platform, then it can go above that. Then when you accept the Jnana platform, then the devotional platform, and like this. Yeah. And to this, if the Mayavadis reply, that it is possible for the Jiva to remove all upadis and become Brahman by the mercy of the all-powerful and benign Brahman. Then Jiva Goswami, anticipating this plea, says, we have netted you. The monists agree that Brahman is devoid of all attributes and potencies. If that same Brahman now has now to bless the Jiva, then it has to have some potency, namely mercy. But if the featureless Brahman has any potency at all, that confirms to the Vaishnava definition of Bhagavan as the Parabrahman, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In that case, Srila Jiva Goswami says, Asmakameva mata sammatam. Their view matches ours. He has no objection to that. If they say that, we have no objection. Says it's by the mercy of Brahman. Yes, that means he has potencies, he's a person. So that is the Parabrahman. So that feature is the Parabrahman. He has no objection to that. In Bhagavat Sandarbha, he will prove that even for Brahman realization, one needs to take shelter of the Supreme Lord. Yes.
Basically what happens is that in their argument, they defeat their own thesis. So if we go to the beginning, then we say yes, but then they defeated themselves.
Yes. Yeah, there's a saying, give enough rope and they'll hang themselves. You know, like the kid's going crazy, you just give them enough rope and then it'll all go crazy and then they'll understand. So, yeah. Srila Baladeva Vibhushan. If the upadi is real, then it is impossible to believe that just by knowledge of I am Brahman, one attains that identity. That is explained. This applies to Brahman being bifurcated by upadis or being reflected. Just by one day saying, I am a king, it is never seen that one becomes a king. Because otherwise, if this worked, it would, you know, if it's a principle, it would work everyone. Everyone would just go, I am rich. Right? You know, that's the whole idea. What is it? The law of attraction, right? You know, you're supposed to get rich, you know, like that. But who's getting rich? Otherwise, people would still be talking about it. Okay? But they're not, yeah. Quote, let the liberation of Ishwar and Jiva occur because of the power of some arrangement of Brahman. End quote. That is harmful to your position, since it admits Brahman has awareness beyond itself and the ability to act. So then, yeah, we can say, so we say, okay, then it does, that, then from there you just go in there. So there's the things that they'll say. So it's only by the mercy of Brahman that we can actually go beyond it. First they'll just say it happens, but then when you push, it's by the mercy of Brahman, because it's inconceivable. And then as soon as they say that, then, okay, now we can discuss properly. Riti.
Prabhupada always uses that stance, like catches them there, and they just say that one word, by the mercy of Brahman, then Prabhupada, then you will see like big explanation. What is that mercy? Then he explains the whole devotional discipline.
Yeah. That's fine. Quick. Okay, Vritti, in the next Anucheda, Srila Jiva Goswami refutes the Mayavadi doctrine concerning the second cave, if the Upadis are accepted as unreal. Right, so that is in... That's in bifurcation or both of them have both?
Because it's okay. With only
Upadi. Okay. Oh, it's like the Buddhists. Some accept that the illusion is real, some accept that it's not real. And some accept that just say that it doesn't even exist. Nothing exists. So, you know, why are we even talking?
Yeah. All the logic is borrowed from the Buddhists.
All the logic borrowed from the Buddhists, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like these, what do you call it? When you get so extreme, it's like these super serious diseases that they need to incubate. So they have to add a host. But they kill the host so quickly that it can't spread. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like that. When they get so extreme, these Buddhists or impersonalists, then it can't spread, so no one will follow it. Because for it to be popular, it actually has to have the greatness, you know, the greatness of God, and that means that, yeah, it has to have an element of supreme, and it has to have the element of nice, selflessness and niceness. So that means then the mercy has to come in. So in the background, that has to be why it's there. So then at that point, that's why everybody, you can, if you can get through the coverings, you can get to that aspect, and then from there bring it into devotional service. So the point is avoiding the you know, what will distract it from there and cause so much argument. It's like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then he's pointing out, is you just get past these things. And so he'll have techniques for doing that. You know, it's like, you think it's one of the, I think it's the, there's one lecture he gave, we mentioned this before, to the intelligentsia. You know, so whether that was just British or that was the British trained Indians, you know, from the aristocracy and all that. But his first opening was that, you know, hell, the condition of hell, that's imagination, what the Vedas talk about, that's imagination. Right? So, now, they'll think, oh, so here's someone who's, you know, a little more thoughtful and all that, like that. So now they listen to the rest of his lecture. Right? But now, in that, as it pointed out, we know from Manu, it says that the living entity, he's only got the subtle body. So the subtle body means the mind. Anything that's just conceived of in the mind, that's imagination. Right? And it just has, as basically, it's as concrete to the living entity as the physical. So the physicals can tend to be a touch more concrete. So, since you're dealing with this, they cover that subtle body with a special body for application in hell. You know, so they can toss them off a mountain and they don't break into pieces. Or even if they do break into pieces, you can just come collect the pieces, put them back together, and drag them back up the mountain again. So, it's all experienced on the platform of the mind. Because with the mind goes the senses and all that, so it's the subtle body. So you can say it's imagination. It's actually happening. Because we generally take it, see, as imagination means it's in the mind. That's the actual thing. But that much of the time it's used as popularly, it just means it doesn't exist. It's just within the mind. But the point is that it's in the mind means you're using elements of that do exist. Right? And the experiences you gain can be the same as if it is actually externally manifest. So therefore, the experiences they get there are the same as if it would happen to them. It's not that they're going, oh, you can't, you know, it's going to hurt, because the mind is there, it has the senses. You know, you fall off the mountain, it's going to hurt. So he uses that to, but you have to know the philosophy that technically well to be able to find where we use the word one way, they use it another, and by that we're saying what we're saying, but they're thinking another, and it works to advantage so that they'll listen to the philosophy. Like if you say to most of those in the Abrahamic, God is one, like that, it doesn't matter which they'll all accept that, but in their God is one means it's their God. God is one, but only as their God. All the other gods aren't their gods, so he's not them. So God is limited. But if you say God is one, it sounds as though it means we're meaning it. He's non-dual. And so they'll listen. But then they'll think we're talking about their God. No, we're talking about God. Is that interesting? Yeah. Okay. Anucheta 39. But if the Upadi is unreal, then bifurcation of Brahman or reflection of Brahman must be unreal since it cannot actually occur. Right? If it's not real, because they'll say it's all unreal, it's not actually happening. Then if it's not happening, then there's nobody's around for that to be happening. Right? So why are they even, worried about it? Jiva's existence being insubstantial like a dream cannot be proved by showing upadis on real objects like pot, restricting part of the sky, or reflecting part of the sky, since it is possible to make a concoction by analogy between something which occurs with something which does not occur. Thus, these explanations are all manifestation of ignorance. But we've already pointed out how you can't do that based on Brahman. Now if you say that it's all illusion, it's not even there, it's unreal, then how, if it's unreal, how do you have bifurcation or reflection? So they can't use their philosophy. So by this point, to defeat an argument against theirs, they come up with an aspect of philosophy that completely defeats their own philosophy. So that's the point. It is impossible to establish these concepts of bifurcation and reflection, which cannot logically exist. They don't exist, and then you throw on top of it that they don't exist, then even more, it doesn't work. So you can't say they don't exist and then use the philosophy. You know what I'm saying? It's for an argument. It's just like, let's say you're doing something, and someone comes in. Oh, what are you doing? Oh, nothing. It's just for argument's sake. As soon as the person goes, you go back to doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
You
have nothing to say.
Yeah. So this is just because they have a mustache doesn't mean that they're not kids, right? So that's the thing. They have these 70-year-old Mayavadis and all that with their beard and all that, but it doesn't mean that their logic isn't a. It's technical logic, but it's not that their conclusions aren't childish. Just because we use a very complicated way to do something doesn't mean that it's better.
But it sounds...
It sounds fabulous. Nice. Yeah, it sounds really, really good. But, yeah.
Are you cheated? That's how you get cheated?
Yes.
Nowadays I observe many elders saying the children are becoming more intelligent. They say that. And now I just flash to me that. Because neither they have any conclusion, the child also doesn't have any conclusion. So
yes.
Whatever they say sounds very nice.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's a nice way of putting it. I probably would approach it, yes, because the adults are becoming more stupid.
Because I also thought about that.
Yeah. And he's nice coming from you. Nice background. So he looks at it from, yeah. So, yeah, because the conclusions they come up with are no better than the ones the adults come up with. So then they look at the, yeah. So, yes. Anucheta Prakashika from Jiva, Sri Jiva Toshani. After showing that empirically real upadis cannot give a satisfactory explanation for the existence of neither the Jiva nor of Ishwara, Srila Jiva Goswami now considers the Shankarite's second opinion that the apparent and upadis at the same time. Yeah, upadis are apparent. Here the upadis are called avidyaka, which means illusory and refers specifically to the pratibhashika, apparent reality of the Mayavadis. Right? So if the first one will work, you'll just say that. And then if you say, oh, it's just apparent, they're not actually there, then people go, oh, okay. No, but that makes even less sense. It's just like if the mechanics of the thing doesn't work because it's just unviable, than saying that they don't exist, now it becomes viable? Right? You know, I want to put 5 liters of water into a half liter glass. And I'll say, that doesn't work. But if I say, but the glass is not real and the water's not real, now will it fit? Now it fits. No, it still doesn't fit. You know? Because if they're saying apparent, they still have to take it back to a reality for it to be an analogy and for people to process it. You have to process something that is familiar to you. Right. You can't process something that's not. Yes.
But if you say it's if they say it's apparent, then it means that they can juggle it in the mind.
Yes. But the point is that doesn't mean it's more logical. They can't use the same philosophy. If the philosophy didn't work in the actual, it won't work in the illusory. Mm-hmm. You know? You have something?
Yeah. Initially when we are discussing about the bifurcation and reflection, it's the upadhi which is making the difference between the Brahman and the Jiva or Ishvara. The upadhi is what is making the difference, either bifurcating or reflecting upon.
Yes.
If we say that is not existing itself, then all your philosophy is like, what is bifurcating or what is reflecting?
Yeah, so what are you even dealing with?
Yes.
So yeah, you can speculate, but you can see it just gets more, it gets closer to Buddhism. So we see is that's generally the thing. They'll work on something more Vedic, then they'll start stepping back until they get into Buddhism. Illusion in this context does not mean non-existence, for non-existence will never give rise to either the Jiva or Ishvara. Rather, illusory means that the upadhis exist neither on the empirical level nor on the absolute level. These apparent upadhis must cease to exist at both the empirical level and transcendental. They are an intangible apparent reality, akin to a dream, misperception, or an hallucination.
Empirical means here, empirical?
Would mean, I keep always forgetting, empirical means?
It's practical reality, which is day-to-day activity.
Yeah. Means that, yeah, you can logically deal with it and stuff. Okay. Yes.
What would be the definition of our upadhis? The identification with the material body?
Means
they don't speak about those upadhis.
They'll talk about that in the beginning, but they'll consider those more basic. Is that you're not the body and you're the soul and those kind of things. So the same things we say that they'll say. It's just that when you get there, they'll say, well, actually, you're not the soul, you're Brahman. But we'll say you're the soul, a servant of Parabrahman. So at that point, that's what we're saying. Getting up to the platform of Vijnanamaya, that's the same it's the same process. But once you get there, then we continue on and they figure they've reached the goal. Okay. The object in a dream or in a misperception, such as a rope seen as a snake, are not tangible. One may eat a big feast in a dream, but he does not feel full upon awakening, and the feast appears real only while dreaming. This dream reality, pratibhashika satta, is inferior to the empirical world, and the absolute realities discussed in the earlier anuchetas. Yet the Mayavadis posit that such apparent upadhis can cause Brahman to take on the characteristics of Jiva or Ishwar. So you're going to a lower level element, but they're saying that this will create this higher, and this will create all this. So they're going more subtle, but they're actually not understanding that they're going deeper into Maya. They're getting farther away from the absolute truth. Because the reflection is upside down, so as they try to explain it, they're actually going the other way. That's the... Yeah, it's kind of like... When devotee was telling me that in the neighborhood at the time, amongst the locals, in the hood there, they used to have saying that they're going to by what they means by they're going to. I say, trying to figure out what that because you have to translate it. They're going to make comments about the individual to such a point that it will place him so low that he'll have to look down to look up. That's really low. It works good in the head. So like this, is that these Maya bodies like that, they get these, they're looking the wrong direction. Like that. Because that's the thing, we understand it's low, it's the highest there and everything like that. So they don't have these things. Because they don't have the transcendental reality.
It's nice, sometimes it's difficult to say because we can look for bhakti and also for impersonalism.
Yes, but the thing is if you understand Krishna's three features, you already understand the distorted derivation that's called impersonalism.
Yes.
Like that. But the point is they've taken it separate from the Supreme, so that's why it takes on that quality. But otherwise, you see, in the context of Supreme, we're studying the same things, we know the same verses, like so many times we say, Krishna's non-dual. That doesn't mean we're talking Mayavad philosophy. It means that it's all Krishna. But at the same time, being all Krishna means everything's connected to Krishna. That means everything would be used in connection to Krishna. But when we say it's all Krishna and it's all connected to Krishna and is therefore, so now what's the point? It's used connected to Krishna, but Krishna in what feature? As Bhagavan. So we use it in connection with Krishna just on the Brahmana Paramatma level, we won't get as far as we will if we understand it on the Bhagavan. So for the devotees, there's no illusion anywhere. But for someone who doesn't have that devotional concept, they can only be an illusion. It might be the illusion's a little thinner, but it doesn't mean they're not an illusion. You know, it's like we say, the gold ball and chain instead of a silver or iron one. Like that. So it's just that they feel it's better.
Generally it is discussed that the Brahman and Paramatman features are constrained to the material world.
Yes.
Pure Goswami gives one explanation that how the Paramatma feature, in what form it exists in the spiritual world, it provides, it's like the Swarup Shakti who provides all the arrangements for the pastimes.
Yeah, so it means, another thing is the Yoga Maya and the Jnana. So the Kriya, the Jnana Shaktis are there. So your Kriya is the basis of Paramatma. Your Jnana is the basis of Brahman. It's your existence. You're sitting on that existence. And so that would be your Yoga Maya. So it's there. But it's not that, but these things will only be discussed here. There it's just, they just act within it.
That sense, whatever is discussed in the Vedas for a pure devotee
is always in the spiritual world. So you can see everything in relationship to the spiritual world. I was saying. But the feature of it being manifest separately, that's only here. Because there it's just part of the scene. So it is. Yeah. Thank you.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Premanandi.